Chapter 35. He continued to stare at her in speechless bewilderment, and she went on with a kind of tender impatience, "Colin, you simpleton, can you not guess that you were watched, and that but for me your Veronica would at this moment be lying under lock and key in her cell?" Instead of which, she continued, speaking more slowly, and leaning back, as though to enjoy the full savor of his suspense, "instead of which she now awaits you in a safe nook of my choosing, where, within half an hour's time, you may atone to her with interest for the infidelity into which I have betrayed you." "She knows, then?" Odo faltered, not daring to say more in his ignorance of Sister Mary's share in the secret. Sister Mary shook her head with a tantalizing laugh. "Tea that you are coming? Alas, no, poor angel. She fancies that as he has been sent from the convent, to avoid you as indeed she was, and by the Reverend Mother's own order, who, it seems, had wind of the intrigue this morning. But, the saints be praised, the excellent sister who was ordered to attend her is in my pay, and instead of conducting her to her relatives of San Bernardo, who were to keep her locked up overnight, has, if I mistake not, taken her to a good woman of my acquaintance, an old servant, in fact, who will guard her as jealously as the family plate till you and I come to her release." As she spoke, she put out her head, and gave a whispered order to the gondolier, and at the word the boat swung round, and headed for the city. In the violent reaction which this strange encounter produced, Odo was for the moment incapable of taking any clear note of his surroundings. Uncertain if he were not once more the victim of some such mischance as seemed to attend all his efforts to succor Fulvia, he sat in silent apprehension as the gondola shot across the Grand Canal, and entered the labyrinth of waterways behind San Moise. Sister Mary took his silence philosophically. "You dare not speak to me, for fear of betraying yourself," she said, "and I scarce wonder at your distrust. For your plans were so well laid, that I had no notion of what was on foot, and must have remained in ignorance, if Veronica had not been put in Sister Martha's charge. But you will both live to thank me, and I hope," she added, laughing, "to own that you would have done better to take me into your confidence from the first." As she spoke, the gondola touched at the head of a narrow passage which lost itself in the blackness of the overhanging houses. Sister Mary sprang out, and drew Odo after her. A few yards down the alley she entered a plain low-storied house somewhat withdrawn behind its neighbors. Followed by Odo, she groped her way up a dark flight of stairs, and knocked at a door on the upper landing. A vague flutter within, indicative of whispers and uncertain movements, was followed by the slipping of the bolt, and a middle-aged woman looked out. She drew back with an exclamation of welcome, and Sister Mary, seizing Odo by the shoulders, pushed him across the threshold of a small dimly lit kitchen. Fulvia, in her nun's habit, cowered in the darkest corner, but at sight of Odo she sprang up, and ran toward him with a happy cry. 3.6. An hour later the two were well on their way toward Mester, where a traveling chaise awaited them. Odo, having learned that Andreani was settled in Padua, had asked him to receive Fulvia in his house till the next nightfall, and the bookseller, whom he had taken into his confidence, was eager to welcome the daughter of the revered Vivaldi. The extremes of hope and apprehension had left Fulvia too exhausted for many words, and Odo, after as he had confirmed every particular of Sister Mary's story, refrained from questioning her farther. Thanks to her friend's resources, as he had been able to exchange her nun's dress for the plain gown and traveling cloak of a young woman of the middle class, and this dress painfully recalled to Odo the day when he had found her standing beside the broken-down chaise on the road to Vercelli. The recollection was not calculated to put him at his ease, and indeed it was only now that he began to feel the peculiar constraint of his position. To Andreani, his explanation of Fulvia's flight had seemed natural enough, but on the subsequent stages of their journey she must pass for his mistress or his wife, and he hardly knew in what spirit she would take the misapprehensions that must inevitably arise. At Mester their carriage waited, and they drove rapidly toward Padua through the waning night. Andreoni, in his concern for Fulvia's safety, had prepared for her reception a little farmhouse of his wife's, in the vineyard beyond the town, and here at daybreak it was almost a relief to Odo, to commit his charge to the Signora Andreoni's care. The day was spent indoors, and Andrea and I having thought it more prudent to bring no servant from Padua, his wife prepared the meals for their guests, and the bookseller drew a jar of his own wine from the cellar. Fulvia kept to herself during the day, but at dusk she surprised Odo, by entering the room with a trayful of plates and glasses, and helping their hostess, to set out the supper table. The few hours of rest had restored to her, not only the serenity of the convent, but a lightness of step and glance that Odo had not seen in her since the early days of their friendship. He marveled to see how the first breath of freedom had set her blood in motion and fanned her languid eye, but he could not suppress the accompanying thought that his own presence had failed to work such miracles. They had planned to ride that night to a little village in the hills beyond Vicenza, where Fulvia's foster mother, a peasant of the Vicentin, lived with her son, who was a vine dresser, and supper was hardly over when they were told that their horses waited. Their kind hosts dared not urge them to linger, and after a hurried farewell they rode forth into the fresh darkness of the September night. The new moon was down, and they had to thread their way slowly through the stony lanes between the vineyards. At length they gained the open country, and growing more accustomed to the darkness put their horses to a trot. The change of pace, and the exhilaration of traversing an unknown country in the hush and mystery of night, combined to free their spirits, and Odo began to be aware that the barrier between them was lifted. To the charm of their intercourse at Santa Chiara was added that closer sympathy produced by the sense of isolation. They were enclosed in their common risk as in some secret meeting place, where no consciousness of the outer world intruded. And though their talk kept the safe level of their immediate concerns, he felt the change in every inflection of Fulvia's voice, and in the subtler emphasis of her silences. The way was long, and he had feared that she would be taxed beyond her strength, but the miles seemed to fly beneath their horses' feet, and they could scarcely believe that the dark hills which rose ahead of them against a whitening sky marked the limit of their journey. With some difficulty they found their way to the vine dresser's house, a mere hut in a remote fold of the hills. From motives of prudence they had not warned the nurse of their coming, but they found the old woman already at work in her melon patch and learned from her that her son had gone down to his day's labor in the valley. She received Fulvia with a tender wonder, as at some supernatural presence descending into her life, too much awed, till the first embraces were over, to risk any conjecture as to Odo's presence. But with the returning sense of familiarity, the fancied recovery of the nursling's features in the girl's definite outline came the inevitable reaction of curiosity, and the fugitives felt themselves coupled in the old woman's meaning smiles. To Odo's surprise, Fulvia received these innuendos with baffling composure, parrying the questions she seemed to answer, and finally taking refuge in a plea for rest. But the accord of the previous night was broken, and when the travelers set out again, starting a little before sunset, to avoid the vine dresser's return, the constraint of the day began to weigh upon them. In Fulvia's case, physical weariness perhaps had a share in the change, but whatever the cause, its effect was to make this stage of the journey strangely tedious to both. Their way lay through the country north of Vicenza, whence they hoped by dawn to gain Peschiera on the Lake of Garda, and hire a chaise which should take them across the border. For the first hour or two they had the new moon to light them, but as it set the sky clouded, and drops of rain began to fall. Fulvia had hitherto shown a gay indifference to the discomforts of the journey, but she presently began to complain of the cold, and to question Odo anxiously as to the length of the way. The hilliness of the country forced them to travel slowly, and it seemed to Odo that hours had elapsed before they saw lights in the valley below them. Their plan had been to avoid the towns on their way, and Fulvia, the night before, had contented herself with a half hour's rest by the roadside. But a heavy rain was now falling, and she at once assented to Odo's tentative proposal that they should take shelter till the storm was over. They dismounted at an inn on the outskirts of the village. The sleepy landlord stared as he unbarred the door and let them into the kitchen. But he offered no comment beyond remarking that it was a good night to be under cover. Fulvia sank down on the wooden settle near the chimney, where a fire had been hastily kindled. She took no notice of Odo when he removed the dripping cloak from her shoulders, but sat gazing before her in a kind of apathy. "I cannot eat," she said, as Odo pressed her to take her place at the table. The innkeeper turned to him with a confidential nod. "Why, your lady looks fairly beaten," he said. "I've a notion that one of my good beds would be more to her taste than the best supper in the land. Shall I have a room made ready for your excellencies?" "No, no," said Fulvia, starting up. "We must set out again, as soon as we have supped." She approached the table and hastily emptied the glass of country wine that Odo had poured out for her. The innkeeper seemed a simple, unsuspicious fellow, but at this, he put down the plate of cheese he was carrying and looked at her curiously. "Start out again at this hour of the night?" he exclaimed. "By the saints, your excellencies must be running a race with the sun. Or do you doubt my being able to provide you with decent lodgings, that you prefer mud and rain to my good sheets and pillows?" "Indeed, no," Odo amicably interposed. "But we are hurrying to meet a friend who is to rejoin us tomorrow at Peshiera." "Ah, Peshiera," said the other, as though the name had struck him. He took a dish of eggs from the fire and set it before Fulvia. "Well," he went on with a shrug, "it is written that none of my beds shall be slept in tonight. Not 2 hours since I had a gentleman here that gave the very same excuse for hurrying forward, though his horses were so spent that I had to provide him with another pair before he could continue his journey." He laughed and uncorked a second bottle. "That reminds me," he went on, pausing suddenly before Fulvia, "that the other gentleman was traveling to meet a friend to a lady," he said, "a young lady. He fancied she might have passed this way, and questioned me closely, but as it happened there had been no petticoat under my roof for 3 days. I wonder, now, if he could have been looking for your excellencies?" Fulvia flushed high at this, but a sign from Odo checked the denial on her lips. "Why," said he, "it is not unlikely, though I had fancied our friend would come from another direction. What was this gentleman like?" The landlord hesitated, evidently not so much from any reluctance to impart what he knew as from the inability to express it. "Well," said he, trying to supplement his words by a vaguely descriptive gesture, "he was a handsome, personable-looking man, smallish built, but with a fine manner, and dressed not unlike your excellency." "Ah," said Odo carelessly, "our friend is an ecclesiastic." "And which way did this gentleman travel?" he went on, pouring himself another glass. The landlord assumed an air of country cunning. "There's the fishy part of it," said he. "He gave orders to go toward Verona, but my boy, who chased the carriage down the road, as lads will, says that at the crossways below the old mill the driver took the turn for Peshiera." Fulvia at this seemed no longer able to control herself. She came close to Odo and said in a low urgent tone, "For heaven's sake, let us set forward." Odo again signed to her to keep silent, and with an effort she resumed her seat and made a pretense of eating. A moment later he dispatched the landlord to the stable to see that the horses had been rubbed down, and as soon as the door closed she broke out passionately. "It is my fault," she cried. "It is all my fault for coming here. If I had had the courage to keep on, this would never have happened." "No," said Odo quietly, "and we should have gone straight to Peshiera and landed in the arms of our pursuer if this mysterious traveler is in pursuit of us." His tone seemed to steady her. Oh, she said, and the color flickered out of her face. As it happens, he went on, nothing could have been more fortunate than our coming here. I see, but now we must go on at once, she persisted. He looked at her gravely. This is your wish? She seemed seized with a panic fear. I cannot stay here, she repeated. Which way shall we go, then? If we continue to Peshiera, and this man is after us, we are lost. But if he does not find us, he may return here. He will surely return here. He cannot return before morning. It is close on midnight already. Meanwhile, you can take a few hours' rest, while I devise means of reaching the lake by some mule track across the mountain. It cost him an effort to take this tone with her, but he saw that in her high-strung mood any other would have been less effective. She rose slowly, keeping her eyes on him with the look of a frightened child. I will do as you wish, she said. Let the landlord prepare a bed for you, then. I will keep watch down here, and the horses shall be saddled at daylight. She stood silent while he went to the door to call the innkeeper. But when the order was given, and the door closed again, she disconcerted him by a sudden sob. What a burden I am, she cried. I had no right to accept this of you. And she turned and fled up the dark stairs. The night passed, and toward dawn the rain ceased. Odo rose from his dreary vigil in the kitchen, and called to the innkeeper to carry up bread and wine to Fulvia's room. Then he went out to see that the horses were fed and watered. He had not dared to question the landlord as to the roads, lest his doing so should excite suspicion, but he hoped to find an ostler who would give him the information he needed. The stable was empty, however, and he prepared to bait the horses himself. As he stooped to place his lantern on the floor, he caught the gleam of a small polished object at his feet. He picked it up and found that it was a silver coat of arms, such as are attached to the blinders and saddles of a carriage harness. His curiosity was aroused, and holding the light closer, he recognized the ducal crown of Pianura surmounting the humilitas of the Valsecas. The discovery was so startling that for some moments he stood gazing at Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.